Accession number 27811, Major Richard Wilson, Reel 6. Now, we're talking about these patrols, the first few patrols where you went out with Lieutenant Pat Hopper, patrolling in the sort of Sungai Manggis, the swamps of that area. You're talking about the sort of nature of the swamp. Did it get deeper, or was it just pretty solidly between a foot and 18 inches?
It had rivers, streams, rivers running through it, which then did get deeper, which you could either wade across or sometimes one possibly had to build a temporary bridge with trees and bamboo and the like. The funny thing about it was that you would think that there would be masses of snakes and things in the swamp.
I was just
going
to ask about that. what about the creepy crawlies, the slithery things?
But I saw very, very few snakes the whole time I was in Malaya. I saw one or two pythons, which wasn't a swamp snake really, and then sometimes some sort of very colourful water snakes running around in the swamp. But it wasn't a problem.
Had they just absented themselves as you arrived?
Well, they could. Yes, I mean clearly they could have done. Because you know when you're sort of sloshing through this sort of ground, you it's not the quietest thing to push through.
What about other slithery, creepy?
Well, the two main problems were, of course, leeches. We had lots of. You got lots of leeches.
What were they like? What was it like when you got leeches on you?
You never really felt them. It wasn't until the evening when you possibly came to take off your jungle boots that they would then suddenly find some leeches was sort of sitting around the top, by which time, of course, they'd got fairly big with your having sucked your blood.
How had they got into your boots?
They're incredible things. They sort of get in the very tiniest they're very, very small before they start sucking you. And they somehow got through. I mean, we had one or two people who were terrified of them getting into certain parts of their anatomy and actually wore a condom during patrolling because they were frightened that a leech would get where it shouldn't go, which would be quite possible for a leech to do. And the only way you can, with the way we used to get them off us was lighting a cigarette and putting it on the leech and it would then fall off.
Just to explain why you couldn't just pull them off.
Well, if you pull them off, you're quite liable to leave the head inside, and this will fester. And of course, in that climate, and being in that sort of dirty conditions, would quite quickly, fester on that. So they're unpleasant. Little things, but
did you get them?
I had some on my calves and that sort of thing. I never got any going where I didn't want them to go. But
was it a sort of daily affair, leeches, or was it just on occasion?
No, I think probably in the more mountainous part of Malaya, it may well have not been the problem that it was in the swamps, but. That the leech was a sort of swamp animal.
Now you said there was a couple of problems. What was the
other? Well, in fact, there were two others really. The next nasty thing were hornets. We used to get a lot of hornets, and in fact, your leading scout. If we suddenly met bandits, the leading and they knew we were there, and we had to go immediately into action. The leading scout would yell "bandits," and one would go into all one's sort of battle drills and all the rest of it. Yeah. Or, but if the leading scout yelled Hornets, which was the other thing, then on the whole, the patrol would scatter fairly quickly, because they were really vicious brutes that we used to get.
So they'd actually come for you.
Well, I think yes, because I think if you sort of stepped on a hornet's nest or knocked one out of a tree or something like that, they got pretty angry. And I certainly had on one occasion a chap stung so badly by them that I had to send him out because it had a bad effect on him. And then the other thing was, what you could deal with, was red ants. Now these were huge in the swamps. These were huge red ants, and they used to build nests in the trees out of sort of grass and stuff from the trees. And often they were sort of head height, and you'd be sort of bashing your way through, and then if you knocked one of these things onto yourself, you were suddenly covered in these red ants, and they bit like hell. They were really very unpleasant, and that was another sort of nasty that one came across in the jungle.
Now, what formation would you adopt? And by formation, I mean this, because people outrided, not riders.
We operated in single file, and there would be a leading scout with a rifle.
How far ahead?
Probably not very far ahead, because a lot of the time you were sort of cutting your way through bamboos and the like, so you wouldn't be very far ahead. That would be followed by the chap with the Bren gun. Then came the patrol leader, followed by more riflemen, and then I would think towards the back would be the wireless operator, who really had the hardest time of all, because they weren't like wirelesses today. These were great big heavy things. I can't remember what the number was now, but they were very heavy.
Could people help him by taking it in turns?
Yes, there was that, but a lot of them were very, very good. They just went on hour after hour carting the wireless. But obviously, if you noticed, he was getting too much after several hours patrolling. It would get switched around the patrol.
Now, so you're basically in single file formation. Mm. Now, you're proceeding, you're searching a square, so you're zigzagging or...?
You were probably zigzagging across the square. Some of the time, we had EBAN trackers. These were...
EBAN?
EBAN. IBAN, I think it was. They came from Borneo. And these were jungle men, people who'd lived in the jungle all their lives, and they came over and they knew the jungle. They could tell if somebody had passed that way by the broken leaves, broken stuff underfoot. They were very good. I mean, they could say, was somebody passed here 2 days ago or one day ago or whatever it was. So they were a great help, and were a help in navigation, without doubt. So we operated in single file, and then had the different drills of what to do if we came across bandit. If the leading scout suddenly saw bandits ahead of him, I mean you could be walking towards each other. Then he would yell bandits, and you'd go into a drill of some of the platoon going left, some going right, and I mean that isn't quite as easy as it sounds, because you know, it's not like being on a football field and just being able to go left and right. Often it might be that on your left you couldn't get through because the jungle was too thick. But one had drills for the different types of action that you might come to. But like all good things in life, generally speaking, when something happened, you hadn't got a drill for it. And you just had to, you had to make up your mind very quickly, action on the spot.
We'll perhaps come to a couple of these. So basically, you just fall out into a line facing the direction of the bandit.
Yes.
How far between you? Roughly. Yeah.
Well, that again is very much determined by the thickness of the jungle that you're going through and all the rest of it.
And would they lie down? I'm thinking of the 12 inches of...
Well, yes, there would be an occasion when you would lie, possibly lie down, I suppose. I mean, if you were lucky enough to see some bandits coming towards you and they hadn't seen you, and they were continuing coming towards you, then obviously if you can get into an ambush position, one would do so.
Now, what was an ambush? How would you lay an ambush?
Well, I think there's a big difference between laying an ambush, which would be a separate operation in itself.
An impromptu ambush.
If they're coming straight towards you, all you can do, I suppose, is the leading scout, it's up to him as to when he you don't want to open fire too far away, because you want to get, if they are coming towards you, you probably only see one. You don't know what's behind him, but you want to get as many people into your killing area as possible. Like all these things, it's very difficult to sort of lay down a drill in this sort of warfare, because everything is instant. You just got to make up and handle the situation as and when it develops. You can lay down the best drills in the world, but probably when it actually happens to you, it won't be something that you've foreseen. And I think that was very much life and jungle fighting on that.
Now, what about when you actually did lay an ambush? This would presumably be something like a track from a village where you knew you'd had reports of terrorists coming, bandits coming down. Yeah. You know, how would you lay an ambush then? What was the normal setup?
Well, some of these ambushes went on for a very long time. You might be in an ambush position for 2 or 3 days, so clearly you can't use the whole of your patrol lying in ambush all the time. A normal sort of ambush position would be a track that was being used probably by the CTs to come in to get food and take it back to where they were. You would pick a spot, obviously, where you've got a good field of fire to your left and your right. You would then have to divide your patrol up into certainly two parts, say there's 12 to 15 of you, and you would have a sort of half platoon base some 200 or 300 yards probably from your ambush position, and one half of your platoon would be ambushing and the other half resting, and then at whatever periods they were, and I can't particularly remember, you would swap them over. So in that way, we could actually continue an ambush position for quite a long period of time. Now, a lot of the ambush positions that were probably one of the big things in Malaya was the rubber, and the first thing you did or you went through before you got into the jungle itself was probably go through a rubber plantation, and there the rubber trees were well cultivated, well spread out, and you could see for quite a long way, and therefore if you could lay an ambush in a rubber plantation, which was very difficult to do because the rubber tappers were there a lot of the time, and certainly came to tap the rubber every day, and obviously if they knew you were there, then whatever you were trying to do, you'd had it. So it wasn't very easy. We used to go, and there was an awful lot. I mean, rubber was the big product of Malaya. Its economy was kept going by the rubber. There were all these rubber plantations with a planter, a European planter running these stations, who led an incredibly hairy life, because there they were out on their plantations with probably quite a nice house, and with a police. They had a police escort there most of the time, or probably all the time, but it was a very dangerous life for them, and we lost quite a lot of them. They all had these huge American cars which were had got armored plating underneath all round, etc. And if they, when they wanted to go into KL or something, then you know, off they went. But obviously the CTs loved trying to have a go at what they thought was a soft target. Let's take me off.
No, we were talking about laying ambushes, I think. But the rubber plantation is, so that's how you'd lay an ambush. Now, just to pick up a couple of things, what about the basher? You go through the, how long would you go? Would you go all day, marching in a single file?
Yes, we go from I can't remember I can't remember what time it got light. I don't know, 7 o'clock. I mean, everything happened at the same time. You know, there was very little difference in when it got light and when it got dark throughout the year. The first thing we'd do in the morning, obviously, was have breakfast.
Now, can I ask you about, that's a good point, and what about food? What were you eating on a jungle patrol?
We carried what was called a 24-hour ration packs.
What was in them?
And that was all all food that was in tins, and all we had to do was to put down one of these hexamine blocks, do they call it? I think they were which gave you a small fire, and then you had your mess tin, and then you put these tins of the food in the mess tin, and it heated up some rather nasty food to keep you going.
What was it? Was it baked beans or was it bully beans?
There were sort of baked beans and sausages, I seem to remember. I think there was some meat loaf or something. And then there was a chocolate bar and the rest of it. And then for liquid, of course, we just took the cleanest water we could find, which we put some tablets, I can't remember what they were called now, chlorine tablets or something, which made the water safe. Because we did actually, you can imagine, we got very, very hot during the day, and we lost an enormous amount of liquid during the day, and so that had to be put back. And then the other important...
Well, what were the water purification tablets like? I mean, some of them taste horrible.
Well, yes. Yes.
Or was there another one to take the taste away?
No, I don't. Well, I can't remember whether there was or not. The other thing, that, of course, at breakfast we had to make sure every man took was a Paladrin tablet.
A what?
Paladrin, which anti-malarial. And that was very important because malaria was rife, and you had to you virtually sort of made your whole platoon line up, and you saw him take his Paladrin tablet, because I suppose that's another thing I should have mentioned before. Of course, was mosquitoes. There were an awful lot of mosquitoes, again, especially in the swamp. And then after breakfast, we'd set off on our patrolling program. We stopped for about 10 minutes in every hour.
What would you do in a stop?
Well, we wouldn't relax. We'd always be in a position to take some action, you know, if we had to. And I think, I'm pretty sure, we did allow them to have a smoke, which might seem rather strange, because clearly smoke in the jungle, if there was any CTs about, they could probably pick up the smoke, the smell of the smoke quite easily, or would do later. But I have a feeling we did, and it was a hard grind, and I think we did allow them to smoke. Probably my fellow officers will say I'm talking total nonsense, but I, because actually out there they did get a free allocation of cigarettes per week. Everybody got came in round tins. I think 50 in a tin. And I think they got a free allocation of one tin a week or something. I personally didn't smoke, so good luck to somebody who smoked mine. But I suppose the answer is as to that there will be certain patrols where you would allow it to happen. And certain patrols, if you were acting on information and you thought you were getting near a terrorist camp or whatever it is, then clearly, obviously, you wouldn't allow that to happen. But they needed a break. And again, very much depending on the sort of jungle that we were going through. I mean, some of it, we had to hack our way through yard by yard, and some of it, you didn't, and that was jolly hard work. And you probably you change over your leading scout.
And what would they use? Machetes or
yeah,
what did they
yeah,
have?
They had machetes. We all carried a machete.
And were they efficient methods of cutting? I mean, yeah, were they good enough for bamboo? And
yeah, they're very good. As long as you if you kept them nice and sharp, they were they were fine.
So you'd have to sharpen them.
Yes, I seem to remember they were sharpened.
Would you do that back at
that base? Yes. Yeah.
So you're going through. You've had your regular breaks. Would there be a lunch break or?
I suppose there might be a longer break in the middle of the day.
But would you cook?
I don't think we cooked. You might chew a bar of chocolate or, and I think we used to get some boiled sweets in this as well. And some of us carried our own. I mean, the main thing I used to exist on out there was tins of Heinz tomato soup, which was the main thing I lived on, which I found very satisfying and seemed to keep me going anyhow.
Now, what about in the evening? So you carry on in the afternoon the same way, I presume?
We just carried on, and then at, I don't know, say four o'clock or something like that, we'd then stop and make a base area. So that would be generally would be a circular area, so you've got all round fence. They were put up there. We carried things called ponchos, which were a waterproof sort of rectangular piece of material that, if it was absolutely pouring of rain, could be used, but used to make a tent at night.
So like a gas cape in a
Sort of thing. Yeah, yes. So you would then sort of put a piece of string between one tree and another, put your poncho over that, and I think we probably used two ponchos, and then had two to a basher, as they were called. That would you then cook your evening meal, and then once it had got dark, especially again in the swamps, you weren't that worried because, quite frankly, it was almost impossible to move in the dark anyhow. And if anybody had been moving in the dark, they would have made such a noise from miles out that you would know they were coming.
Would you have a sentry or any?
Oh yes, you would all night. Yes, it was. Oh yes, there was always one sentry on duty. You'd normally do, I think we did 2 hours on, two and whatever it came out at off. But I think they normally did a couple of hours stint.
And that would be to avoid the sentry getting too tired. So just split it into stints.
Yes.
Would you take a turn with everyone else?
Yes. Yes. We all took a turn. Didn't matter the rank.
Did you check they were awake yourself as the
officers? Yes. I seem to remember. I think we picked a piece. If we were going towards where we thought there was a CT camp, if we thought they were in front of us, and I seem to remember that we picked a likely piece of ground where the sentry stood. So you have one sentry on, and then he'd do his 2 hours, and he'd go to number two, who would then get out of his basher and go to where the sentry stood. So you always actually knew where he was. And yes, one did check to make sure they were awake, and it was jolly difficult keeping awake for two. Perhaps we did an hour, I don't know. 2 hours would have been a jolly long time. We'd been going all day. We were pretty tired by the end of the day, and then suddenly you have to be a sentry. You probably can't see more than two or three yards in front of you, and it's all just dense black, and with the added sort of jumpiness of the monkeys and birds and other things. Well, I'm not quite sure what other things, but I mean, I'm sure there were making actually quite a noise for some of the night, anyhow.